Mildred found herself faced with a barrage of questions from Sunita as soon as she had awakened. The Baron's daughter was puzzled by the information from Marcos that the albino had been freed by the Pale Ones, as this contradicted what Mildred had told her about the companions being friends and equals. However, when Mildred had learned from Sunita more about Marcos and Chan, she explained to Sunita that it was perhaps a ploy to allow Jack to go free, and then she did something that she wouldn't have believed possible before she found herself doing it.
I don't even know why I'm telling you this. For God's sake, you could tell Marcos and have Jack killed. But I trust you not to.
Her eyes met Sunita's, and in them Mildred could see something she trusted.
Look, you see my friends as the enemy because of the color of their skin, and they see you as the enemy because you overpowered us and locked them up. So they'll use any method to work a means of escape. Isn't that exactly what Marcos would do in such circumstances?
I can understand this, but Marcos will not. And if your albino friend attempts to free the Pale Ones, then he will be killed. They all will.
Then let me speak to him. Try to explain. Let me see the others.
Would that it were that simple. Marcos will not allow it.
But you're the leader's daughter, for God's sake. Surely you outrank him.
You forget I am also a woman. I have a place of honor in our community, but no real authority.
Well, this is just stupid. It'll end in a firefight where people will get hurt unnecessarily.
You speak almost as if you do not know which end of the burning stick to grasp.
That's about right, Sunita.
The next couple of days went by quickly, all too quickly for Mildred. On the advice of the leader's daughter, she said nothing about their discussion and didn't pursue the matter of gaining release for her companions. Instead, she immersed herself in the life of Pilatu, learning about the society in which she found herself. She learned, somewhat to her surprise, that she liked it. The people of Pilatu were pleased to see her up and about. For the first day, Sunita went with her. That was more, Mildred felt, to prevent her making contact with the companions than to show her around. The people she met were pleased to show her their part of the ville and to talk with her about their island and the place from whence Mildred had come. It had been a while since there had been new arrivals on the island, particularly a sister and an albino accompanied by Whitelanders, so there was much curiosity about her history. Mildred skirted this wherever possible. She couldn't betray her friends by describing them as her captors, but neither could she follow Sunita's advice to describe them as such until the initial flurry of interest had died down. Instead, she turned the attention back on the islanders by asking them about their ville. The actual settlement was about half a mile from the sea, built on higher ground on the side of the island that faced the vast ocean, away from the mainland. The ville had been located here to secure optimum shelter from the elements. There was a path that led to the inlet where Mildred could see the fishermen's boats. The inlet below appeared to be the only safe place for them to launch, information that Mildred stored in her memory as useful. But her immediate thoughts weren't of escape. Many of the stories she heard about the island echoed what Sunita had told her. However, she also learned through these exchanges that the people of the island had a strong sense of identity. They were linked by their skin color, and although they were all different, indeed there had been many whose differences spilled into bloodshed, still, at the end of the day, they would band together at a threat from the Whitelands. They knew that they and their ancestors had existed as a minority within the Whitelands and had been treated as little more than animals during their history. They lived on the island because their ancestors had refused this way of existence and had chosen to live on their own free terms. Petty personal differences counted for little when considering the welfare of their people. And it was then that Mildred realized that she felt echoes of her own childhood, the days when her father had been a Baptist minister, always fighting against those who wanted his daughter, his family, his friends, his flock, to use separate schools, restaurants, buses, washrooms. The society in which she now found herself reminded her of the one she had wished for when yet another drive-by shooting or attack had stove in the windows of a neighbor's house, when yet another gasoline bomb had razed a church. As she had grown up and become a doctor, moving to places where things seemed much more laid back, as the 60s had given way to the 70s and 80s, it had seemed that things had changed, that there was equality. Yet the fact that she was black and the majority wasn't had never been that far from the surface. Prejudice and unequal treatment and opportunity were still a part of her life in the world she had known before Skydark. Here, she found none of that. This was the society of which her father had dreamed, in which black people were just people. She felt a sense of kinship that went deep, deeper than the present, stretching into the past. When she saw Jack, and he raised the matter of freeing the rest of their companions, she felt uncomfortable. She knew that rescue should be a priority, but she stalled Jack to leave things as they were for a few days while she gained the confidence of the leader's daughter. It would be a tricky matter to get them released, and escape would be difficult, fatal if the attempt failed. Even as she spoke, she could see questioning in Jack's burning red eyes. He knew she was stalling, and couldn't work out why. Neither could she. Deep in her heart, she knew what the companions meant to her, and she knew from some of the things she heard the Pilatin say about the White Lands that there were things in this society that were merely the inverse of what she had left behind. Mildred was torn, and right now, Mildred had no idea what she should do.
It is time that you met my father, but he is like the lion in winter. Where once he was tall, erect, and noble, now he is bowed by the weight of years upon him, and responsibility only adds to the burden. He takes much more time to think these days, and so do not worry if he does not at first respond to you.
That's all right by me.
Mildred was keen to meet Barris, the leader of Pilatu. Everything that Sunita had told her over the past couple of days pointed to a man whose days were drawing to a close. It seemed that the Ville's medic could do little to help, and Mildred knew it could only strengthen her position if she were able to assist his suffering in some manner.
You do realize why I want to see him, don't you, Sunita?
I have told you that there would be much opposition to releasing your friends. The untruth spoken by your friends to gain the albino's release will weigh against them in my father's judgment, and also in the opinions of many within the village.
By which you mean Marcos won't like it, right?
I believe you already know the answer to that question, Mildred. Marcos will find it impossible to believe that people from the White Lands could treat a brother or a sister as equal. You have to understand that he is not a bad man.
I know. I can appreciate that. He's a man who's always thought a certain way and has no experience to teach him otherwise. But I figure if he's a good man and can take the time to learn a little about the others, he'll see beyond their pale skins.
If his brother allows him to think differently than he.
I had kind of noticed that. We'll just have to see.
Then let us depart.
The two women left Sunita's quarters and walked the short distance between her adobe hut and the larger premises where the ailing leader held court. As they covered the ground, Mildred thought about the decision that had brought her to this. She had seen Jack when the gigantic wild boar he had helped capture had been carried into the Ville. When she had tried to talk to him, he had simply asked her why the rest of the companions were still in jail, while he and Mildred were free, and she had the ear of the leader's daughter. It was a question that Mildred couldn't, in all honesty, answer. She felt guilty that her companions were incarcerated while she was free, and yet, since awakening in the Deathlands, her world to this point had been almost entirely white, with little cultural recognition to the people she had left behind. It wasn't until she had awakened in Pilatu but she realized how much of her identity had been based on that cultural heritage. And she couldn't yet bring herself to betray this community that had embraced her. Still, she had been through life and death with Ryan and his people, and she was at least as much a part of them as of the people of Pilatu. When it came down to it, they may share a common heritage, but she was still over a century older than anyone else on the island, and her world was very different. It was a balancing act she had to tread carefully. As they approached the leader's quarters, she saw Marcos go in ahead of them. The sec boss gave them a saturnine glare before entering, as though annoyed that his audience with the Baron would inevitably be interrupted. Mildred felt a shiver run through her as Marcos looked away. She had encountered the sec boss several times over the past few days. Indeed, it seemed at times as though he were following her, for wherever she went, he would soon appear, and she could feel a disturbing thrill whenever he was near. The woman had wondered if he were keeping an eye on her, unsure of where her allegiance lay. Of course, she had to admit he had a reason to doubt. They had spoken a few times, and on each occasion he seemed to probe her about her views on the island and the people who lived here. He was blunt, almost to the point of rudeness, yet listened carefully and attentively to her answers. In his earnestness and totally serious devotion to the cause of culture and separatism espoused by his brother Chan, Marcos reminded Mildred of Rodney Stone, an intern at the hospital where she had been resident before her operation and subsequent cryogenic stasis. An intense and dedicated man, Rodney had seemed at first to be completely immersed in his work to the expense of all personal relationships. He appeared completely disinterested in anything that fell outside of the definition of work. When he'd asked Mildred for a date, she had been astounded. In his ivory tower of medicine, Rodney had seemed quite aloof. Actually, this had masked his insecurity and inability to communicate in any other way. There was much about Marcos that was similar, and Mildred was beginning to look at him in a different way. He was handsome, there was little doubt, and despite his brusque manner, there were waters that ran deep. For she had learned that Chan was always the weaker, and their mother had died giving birth to him, leaving only their father to raise them. Their father had died as well when the boys were still young, leaving the older, stronger Marcos to provide for himself and his sickly brother. But Chan was smarter, and he used this to dominate his older, stronger brother. Marcos was still smart enough to realize that, but felt an obligation to his only living family that constrained him. It was this constraint that Mildred was sure she felt now. There was an attraction between herself and Marcos, and a man such as he would eventually reveal what was in his heart when his reserve was exhausted. For her part, she was unwilling to examine this attraction too closely, especially when she thought of J.B. sitting in jail. She was unsure what her attraction to Marcos meant. Right now, she really didn't want to think about that too much. It was going to be difficult enough to obtain a release for the companions without Marcos interfering on personal or other grounds. Sunita led them into the leader's quarters, acknowledging the greetings of the Sec Guard with a regal nod as they passed. Outside, it was warm and bright, but within it was dark and cool, with the shades drawn over the windows and only candlelight to illuminate the room. For as all the houses in the village, the leader's quarters consisted of one room with separated areas for kitchen, latrine, and ablutions. These small areas didn't take away from the richly textured decorations and hangings on the walls of the main area, nor from the beautifully hand-carved furniture and ornamentation that stood on the rush matting. As with Sunita's abode, there were signs of status within the community, but no sense of ostentation. A healer stood in attendance a short distance from the leader's bedside, close enough to respond to his call, but not close enough to intrude on discussion. Marcos was seated on a chair by the side of the bed. The Vill's leader was propped up on pillows. It was Mildred's first sight of the man, although she had heard much of him from his daughter. Her first thought was that Barris was clearly dying. There was likely nothing she would be able to do except make his decline easier. He was stick-thin as he lay on the bed, naked from the waist up, his lower half covered with a thin sheet. She could see his ribs clearly through pale gray skin. His cheeks were sunken, almost as much as his eyes. His hair was white, with the odd streak of gray to remind people that once it had been more than the sparse covering it was now. His arms had lost all flesh, all muscle. He moved while talking to the sec boss, and his movements were stiff and painful, as though any movement at all was an effort. It looked to Mildred, even at first glance, as though the leader were suffering from a cancer that had eaten away at him and was now ready to claim that last spark that kept him alive.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.